Oh, I don't think so.
That he was going to kill me, for instance, because of his daughter? Or...
No, nothing like that.
Or that he's expecting me back? In the ranks?
I don't recall that.
Artyom said nothing while he digested all of this. Then he remembered that Homer was still there, studying him.
Crazy.
Artyom tried his best to laugh.
I don't think that...
Homer warned him.
No matter what anyone says, I'm absolutely certain that...
How would you know? You.
Just because you carry on searching for survivors, just because you refuse to give in, they think you're mad.
Listen, said the old man, looking at Artyom seriously.
You're destroying yourself for people's sake, and on my word of honor, I don't understand why they treat you like this.
I go every single day.
Up there?
Every day. Up the escalator, onto the surface. Then up a high-rise, on foot, up the stairs, onto the roof, with an army knapsack. People on the bikes nearby started listening more closely and racing more slowly.
And no, not once have I heard anyone reply. So what? What does it prove?
Artyom wasn't just shouting at Homer now, but at all these fucking cyclists, hurtling straight into the wall, into the earth.
It doesn't prove anything. Why can't you feel it? There must be other people, there must be other cities. We can't be the only ones in this hole, in these caves. You're a fine one, Artyom. Now you've really fucked me off,
exclaimed a young guy with a long nose and little eyes.
The Yankees bombed everyone to hell. There's nothing left. Why do you have to keep on suffering? They hit us. We hit them. Full stop.
But what if we aren't the only ones?
Homer asked, almost as if he was asking himself.
What if I were to tell you that...
He clambers up there like he's going to work. He's radioactive himself, and he contaminates other people. A walking corpse.
The young guy just couldn't stop.
Do you have to poison all of us in here now?
If I were to tell you that there are survivors, that there have been signals from other cities, and they were picked up...
Say that again.
There have been signals from other cities,
Homer said firmly.
They were picked up, and there were conversations.
You're lying.
I myself know a man who handled the radio traffic.
You're lying.
And what if I tell you he's standing right here in front of you? What will you say to that?
Homer winked at Artyom.
Eh?
That you flipped your lid, Granddad. Or you're deliberately lying. You are lying, aren't you?
You're lying!
Chapter 3 The Pipe. The ceilings at the station were low, to suit people. But the tunnels had not been built for people. They measured 5 meters from wall to wall, and the floor and ceiling were separated by the same distance. Far away at the other end of the metro there dwelt wild savages who believed that the tunnels were passages dug through the solid ground by the great worm, the god who created the earth and gave birth to human beings from out of his belly. And it was only afterwards that people had repudiated their creator and adapted these passages for their own needs. And instead of the worm, they had built trains of metal for themselves and started themselves the lie that they had existed in the beginning, and there had never been any worm. Why not believe in a god like that? He was better adapted to a life underground. The tunnels were dark and frightening. The groundwater oozed into them, in little rivulets, and threatened to smash through the cast iron tunnel linings at any moment and engulf entire lines. The rivulets gave off water vapor, and the cold mist prevented the light of torches from penetrating very far. The tunnels had not been created for man, no doubt about that, and man had not been created for the tunnels. Even here, only 300 meters away from the station, it felt creepy, and the men prattled to drown out the whispering dread. The campfire of half-dried billets smoked slightly. The tunnel, of course, was alive. It wheezed as it breathed, drawing in the hazy smoke from the campfire with its perforated lungs, savoring it, as if it was smoking a cigarette. The smoke whirled and eddied, then flew upwards, disappearing into the shaggy, overgrown bronchial tubes of the ventilation shafts. A little distance away stood the hand-powered rail trolley on which the watch had arrived. It was 300 meters to the station. If someone advanced towards Exhibition Station out of the northern darkness, the watch had to bear the brunt of the attack, sacrificing their lives if necessary, and send one survivor to the station. To warn people, so that the children would have time to hide, and the women could take guns and join the men in blocking off the entrance with their own bodies. It had always worked. That was why Exhibition Station was still there, still inhabited after 2.5 decades. But for the last couple of years, if anyone had ever turned up here, it was only by mistake. The final terrible threat to both the station and the metro as a whole, the Dark Ones, had disappeared, annihilated by a barrage of missiles about 2 years ago. And everyone at the station remembered who had saved the station from those brutes. Artyom. Now to the north of Exhibition, there was only a chain of frozen, empty stations, of which the first was Botanical Gardens. That station lay very close to the surface, and the hermetic doors that were supposed to cut off the world on the surface from the world down below stood wide open and broken. It was impossible to live at Botanical Gardens, and people weren't interested in what came beyond it. So the limit to which the light of the camp extended marked the precise end of the world. Everything after that was outer space. The watchman sat there, walled off from the vacuum by sandbags heaped up into parapets. Their Kalashnikovs were arranged in a pyramid, leaning against each other. A battered smoke-blacked kettle warmed its belly on the flames. Artyom sat down with his face towards the campfire, setting the back of his head towards the emptiness of the tunnel. He sat Homer down right beside him. Artyom had deliberately brought his visitor into this quiet void, as he didn't want to listen to the old man's story back there, beside the bicycles, in front of everyone. He couldn't do it completely without witnesses, but at least let there be as few as possible.
"You shouldn't sit with your back to the pipe,"
Levashov hissed at him. But Artyom trusted this pipe just at the moment. He had learned to feel it. The others had sat down so as to keep their eyes trained on the open mouth of the tunnel. Homer had been warned to tell his tale quietly in order not to excite the others. But Homer didn't know how to do things quietly.
"The town is called Polar Dons. It's up on the Kola Peninsula. There's an atomic power station close by, and in working order too, note. The station has an operational life of over 100 years in reserve, because it's only powering one town, and the town has been transformed into a fortress. They built a log stockade and other fortifications, organized sound defenses. There were military units close by guarding the power station, and the garrison of Polar Dons was drawn from them. The area around it is deadly, the far north, but they're holding out. The station provides them with light and warmth for farming, so..."
"Stop making it all up, will you?" Levashov shouted from the other side of the campfire.
He had red eyes, fleshy ears, and a higgledy-piggledy moustache that pointed upwards.
"What fucking dons are you talking about? After Botanical, there's no one in the pipe at all, apart from the wandering dogs. As if one crackpot wasn't enough, now another one's shown up."
"They have their own club here now,"
said Armenchik, winking and picking at his teeth with his fingernail to winkle out a fiber of pork that was stuck between them.
"The Crimson Sails Dreamers and Romantics Club."
"Who picked up the signal? Who talked to them?" asked Artyom, looking at the old man's beard and his moving lips, trying to read them like a deaf man.
"I," Homer began, "I'm from that part of the world myself, from Arkhangelsk. So I kept hoping to find someone, thinking maybe some of my folks had survived. I kept listening and searching, and eventually I found something. There was nothing from Arkhangelsk, that's true, but Polar Dons? An entire town. Can you imagine it? Up on the surface, hot water, light. But the most fascinating thing is that they have an electronic library still intact, on magnetic media and CDs. The whole of world literature and cinema. Do you understand? They have all the electricity they could need.
What's the wavelength? What's the frequency? Artyom asked abruptly, interrupting Homer's cozy narrative.
So it's a kind of Noah's Ark, which hasn't saved all the animals two by two, but the entire culture of our civilization.
The old man continued, as if he hadn't heard. When was the contact? How frequent was it? Where was your radio set located? What kind of equipment was it? From what height did you pick up the signal? So why didn't anything work for me? The old man had been expecting a conversation, not an interrogation. A cozy conversation beside the fire. But Artyom wanted this moment too much to waste it on rose-tinted schmaltz. The first thing he had to do was make sure this was true. Artyom knew all about the vague mirages that loomed up in the desert on the surface. He didn't want to admire them, he wanted to touch them, believe in them.
Well?
He wouldn't let it go, kept pushing. He couldn't let the old man slip out of his grasp.
Remember exactly. Why doesn't it work for me any longer?
Homer
began, smacking his lips and pondering, turning his eyes away towards the darkness and eventually giving in.
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? How's it possible for you not to know, if you picked up the signal yourself?
The old man squirmed a bit in embarrassment, and then confessed, the bastard.
I wasn't the one who picked it up. I just happened to meet this man, a radio operator, he told me.
Where? Where did you meet him? What station?
The old man sighed a bit more.
Teatralnaya station, I think. Teatralnaya.
Smack in the hottest spot in the metro, that is. Do you think I'm scared of going and checking for myself?
I don't think anything of the kind, young man,
Homer said in a dignified fashion.
When?
A couple of years ago, I don't remember.
He doesn't remember. The only time that Artyom had heard someone's distant, weak voice in the jagged gaps between the hissing and the howling of the airwaves had been imprinted on his mind forever. And even now he only had to start listening for that sound to ring in his ears like the dried-up voice of the sea in a seashell. How could anyone forget something like that? How could anyone dream all his life about writing a book for his descendants, for the future generations, so that those generations would know where they came from, so that they wouldn't lose the dream of one day returning to the surface, and not remember every little detail of something like that? And at Teatralnaya, too.
You're lying, said Artyom quite certain. You just want me to like you.
You're mistaken. I simply...
You want me to like you, so that I'll spill all the beans for you. My entire sodding story. You decided to win me over, right? You probed for a soft spot and sank in the hook, right?
Certainly not. It's an absolutely real event.
Ah, come off it.
Oh,
said hook-nosed Armenchik, sucking in his snot with relish.
The dreamers are arguing over whose dream is dreamier.
Infuriated with himself and this stupid old liar, Artyom laid the back of his head against a bullet-riddled sandbag and squeezed his eyelids together. Fucking fantasist. As soon as your soul grows a scab over itself, someone comes along and picks it off. The old man frowned and didn't attempt to change Artyom's mind. Screw him anyway. They didn't say another word to each other until the end of the watch. As they emerged into the station, Artyom didn't even exchange glances with the old man in farewell.
There's reliable information. A signal's been picked up from the Kola Peninsula. There are survivors there, said Artyom, glancing at Kirill significantly.
Honestly?
Honestly. Kirill jumped up in the air. He was so delighted. He judged his breathing wrongly and started coughing violently. Knowing what would come next, Artyom gave him a handkerchief. When Kirill recovered, he tore the handkerchief away from his mouth and examined it with a frightened, guilty look that wrung Artyom's heart.
It will all pass. You'll go chasing rats again. It's no big deal, just a little bit of blood.
Mom scolds me. Don't show her. You won't show her, will you?
Oh, come on, will you? You and me. We're like that, a team.
You don't squeal on me, I don't squeal on you.
Swear on the order?
I swear on the order.
Swear solemnly?
I swear solemnly on the order.
Kirill clambered up onto his knees.
Come on, tell me.
Well, said Artyom, there's definite information. A signal was picked up from the north, from the Kola Peninsula. An atomic power station has survived there completely untouched. And there's a town beside it. It's called Polar Dawns. Beautiful, eh? So, we're not here alone. Do you understand that, Kirill? We're not alone. There are other survivors, too. And we found them. How about that?
Wow! Cool!
Said Kirill, gazing at Artyom with his huge, pale eyes.
But is it really true?
It is really true. And that power station makes enough electricity to keep the whole town warm all year round. And they've built a huge glass dome over the town. Can you imagine that?
Nuh-uh.
Like a glass, only big.
What for?
To keep the heat in. Outside there's a snowy blizzard, but inside the weather's fine and warm. Trees in blossom, just like in that book of yours. And fruit orchards with apples in them. And tomatoes, by the way. People walking along the streets in their t-shirts. There's heaps and heaps of food, all sorts of sweet things. And the toys aren't like what you have. Those used cartridge cases, all different sorts of toys.
Kiryuha squeezed his eyes shut, diligently trying to imagine all this. He coughed a couple of times with his mouth closed quietly, restraining himself. Breathed out long and slow. He probably couldn't imagine it. Artyom himself couldn't.
And in summer, this dome opens up, and they live in the open air. Not under the ground, but outside, in houses with windows. Through the windows they can see the other houses, or the forest, for instance. That's the way they live. Everything clean, dry, and fresh. Right out in the sun. And in air like that, not a single microbe can survive. They all die. And people walk along the street without any gas masks.
All the microbes? And the tuber dies too?
Asked Kirill, instantly wide awake. All of them. And tuber, first of all.
So, I can just go there and breathe without a gas mask in order to be cured?
I think so, said Artyom. Yes. Here in the tunnels, the damp, stuffy air makes things really easy for the tuber. But fresh air means instant death for it.
Wow! I have to tell Mom. She'll be so happy. And are you going to go there?
Well, now, this place, Polar Dawns, is very far away. It's not that easy to get there. You have to build up your strength.
I'll build mine up. How much do I need?
Asked Kirill, bouncing on Artyom's knee.
You need a lot. Do you know how long it takes to get there? On all-terrain troop transports, probably 6 months. Across the surface, through the forests and the swamps, along the ruined roads.
Well, so what? I'll get there.
Nah, I probably won't take you with me. I'll only go with other soldiers from the Order.
How is that?
Your mother says you don't eat anything. We don't need a wimp like that with us in a troop transport team. Nothing but a burden. And it's a tough journey, lots of obstacles to overcome. Monsters every step of the way. We'll have to survive lots of adventures. And how are you going to survive them if you don't eat anything? You'll peg out in the very first adventure. No, our order needs soldiers, not weaklings.
I can't look at those mushrooms any longer. Ah!
What about the vegetables? Your mom got you some vegetables. Did you see the tomato? That tomato traveled all the way across the metro from Sebastopol to get to you.
Yuck!
Exactly the same kind of tomato, by the way, as the tomatoes that grow in the streets and the gardens of that town Polar Dawns. Come on now, try it. It has a whole ton of vitamins in it.
Okay. I'll eat the tomato then, if it's the same kind that grow there.
Get it down you right now, in front of me.
Then while I do it, you tell me more about the town and the dome like a glass?
Kiryuha's mother, Natalia, was standing outside, listening to everything, every single word, through the tarpaulin.
with shadows flickering across her face and her fingers twisting and twining together.
I got him to eat the tomato,
Artyom told her with a smile.
Why did you tell him that nonsense of yours? He'll drive me crazy with it now,
said Natalia, not smiling back at him.
Why be so quick to call it nonsense? Maybe the town of Polar Dawns does exist. Let him imagine it.
The doctor was here yesterday. He came from Hansa.
Artyom forgot what word he was going to say next. He was afraid to guess what Natalia was going to tell him, so he simply didn't think anything. He tried not to think in order not to jinx things.
He's got 3 months left, that's all. You and your Polar Dawns.
Natalia's mouth twisted out of shape, and Artyom realized what had been in her eyes all the time they were talking.
You mean there's absolutely nothing?
A film of dried-up tears.
Mom! Artyom's going to take me to the far north with him in a troop transport. Will you let me go?
He thought Anya would be asleep already, or pretending to be asleep as usual, anything to avoid him. But she was sitting on the bed with her bare legs crossed under her and clutching a half-liter bottle containing something cloudy with both hands, as if she was afraid someone might take it away from her. He caught a whiff of alcohol.
Here,
she said, holding it out to him.
Have a swig.
Artyom did as she said, scalding his throat with the home brew and held his breath and blinked. It made him a little dizzy and warmed him up a bit.
Now what?
Sit down,
said Anya, slapping the blanket beside her.
Sit down, please.
He lowered himself onto the spot she had indicated, then half turned his head to glance at her. A simple vest with shoulder straps. The downy fluff on her hands was standing up on end. From the cold? The same as she was 2 years ago, black hair cut short in a boyish style, thin, pale lips, nose slightly too big for that delicate face with a crook in it, but without it the face would be insipid and boring. Her arms were woven completely out of cables, like the arms of anatomical models without a trace of girlish softness in them, and the muscles on her shoulders were like epaulettes. A long neck with an artery pulsing rapidly, and that neck bone of hers there. Her collarbones stick out. Those collarbones used to make him want to love her and pity her and torment her until he was all dried up. Sharp nipples showing through the white fabric. Why does a light bulb shine brightly at first, and then burn out?
Put your arm around me.
Artyom reached his arm out and arranged it awkwardly on Anya's shoulder in a brotherly kind of way, or as if he was hugging a child. She leaned slightly towards him as if she wanted to nestle against him, but all those cables in her remained taut and twisted, and Artyom couldn't loosen up either. He took another swig. Hoping. He couldn't do any of the right things either. He'd got out of the habit. Anya touched him. Then she ran her lips across his cheek.
Prickly.
Artyom shook up the murky liquid in the plastic bottle and downed a really big gulp. His head was full of the far north and an all-terrain vehicle.
Let's try again. We have to. All over again, from the beginning.
She lowered her fingers, cold and rough, onto his belt, and deftly unhooked the buckle.
Kiss me. Come on, kiss me.
Yes, I...
Come to me.
Wait, just a moment.
Well, what's wrong? Take this off me. It's too tight. I want you to undress me. You.
Anya.
What is it?
That's right.
Shh. I'm cold.
Yes, I...
Come here. That's it. And you too. Come on. Come on. Take this nasty shirt off.
Okay, just a moment.
There. God, let me have a swig.
Take it.
Come on. Here. Right here. Like you used to do. Do you remember? Do you still remember?
Anechko.
Well, what are you doing there?
Well?
Yeah. You're so...
Well? What are you doing? Come on.
I'm not used to it anymore. I'm sorry.
Let me do it. Why do you have to? Let me have it.
Anya.
Well? Well, come on. Right in there. Do you feel it?
Yes. Yes.
It's been so long for me. You're completely... Why are you like that? Don't you understand? I need you. You! Well?
Okay. Just a moment. It's just been a bad day.
Shut up. Quiet. Let me try. Just lie there.
Today I...
Shut up! Close your eyes and shut up. That's it. That's it. Right. And now... Now just... Well, what's wrong with you? What?
I don't know. It's not working.
Well, what?
God only knows. No, my head's just full of...
What? What's your head so full of?
I'm sorry.
Get off me. Go away.
Anya.
Where's my vest? Wait. Where's my vest? I'm cold.
Oh, come on. Don't act this way. You're not the problem. It's not because of you.
No more. That's it. And stop trying to fake your feelings.
That's not true.
Push off. Do you hear? Push off.
All right, I...
Where are those fucking panties? That's it. If you don't want to, you don't want to. Or are you all withered up down here from the radiation?
No, of course not. What do you...
You just don't want it with me. To have children from me.
I told you. It's been a bad day.
We don't have any because they know. You don't want them. You're not waiting for them.
That's not true.
I... Artyom... I left for you. Smashed everything with my father to hell because of you. After that war, after the battle with the Reds. He's in a wheelchair. Him. He can't walk. And they sliced his arm off. Do you at least understand what that means to him to be an invalid? And I left him, my own father, to be with you. I went against him. Against his will.
So what can I do about it? He doesn't even think of me as a man. I tried to tell him the whole truth, but he's the one who doesn't want us to be together. What's that to do with me?
To have your children. Do you understand that? Yours. I stopped going up on the surface so all my female organs would be healthy. They're like a sponge. The radiation. You know that? Those damned mushrooms. To fit in here in this station of yours. Do you think I see myself? That I see my future like that? I abandoned my duty to sing lullabies to pigs and for what? But you just carry on. You haven't stopped for a single day. You've completely burnt yourself out down there. Do you understand? Maybe that's why it didn't work for us. And it isn't working now. And I've begged you so many times. Your father has begged you so many times.
Sukhoi isn't really...
What are you doing it for? You just don't want any children. Is that it? You just don't like children. Is that it? You don't want any from me? You don't want any at all? You don't give a shit for any of that? The only thing you're fit for is saving the world. But what about me? Here I am. You're letting me go. You're losing me. And you want to lose me. Is that it?
Anya, why are you...
I cannot go on like this. I don't want to go on. I don't want to wait. I don't want to beg for sex. I don't want to dream about getting knocked up. And I don't want to be afraid that if I do get knocked up by you, I'll have a monster. That's enough. Shut up. And you will have a monster, Artyom. You're like a sponge, too. You'll pay for every one of your trips to the surface. Do you understand that? Shut up, you bitch. Go away. Go away, Artyom. Go away and don't come back.
I'll go.
Yes, go.
All this is in a whisper. The shouts are in a whisper. The groans are in a whisper. The crying is in a whisper. All soundless, the way it is with ants. And all the neighbors pretend to be asleep. And everyone knows everything. The protective suit fitted into the bundle perfectly. He put his service Kalashnikov, which he was forbidden to take out of the station, on top of it, with 6 magazines of cartridges bound together in pairs with blue insulating tape and a plastic bag of dried mushrooms. The gas mask stared murkily at him until Artyom closed it in with the zip, yanking it violently like an annoying corpse in a sack. Then he heaved the knapsack onto his shoulders, his own curse, his rock of Sisyphus.
Grendel, get up. Collect your things, just don't make any noise.
The old man seemed to have been sleeping with his eyes open. He woke up immediately.
Where are we going?
Did you tell me the truth about Teatralnaya? About a radio operator of yours? About him being there?
Yes, yes.
Right then. Will you show me the way there?
To Teatralnaya?
Homer asked, hesitantly. You really did think I'd chicken out, eh? Screw that, Granddad. Maybe it's hell for some, but for us it's the field of our military glory. Well, or was it all just lies?
No, it wasn't.
Come to Teatralnaya with me. I've got to see this man of yours for myself, and ask him about everything. Let him give me his radio, so I'll believe it.
It was 2 years ago, you know.
Let's make an arrangement, the two of us. You lead me to this radio operator, and I tell you everything you wanted to ask me about. Without hiding a thing. The dark ones, the bright ones, the murky ones, whatever you fancy. The history of my heroic feat. I'll tell you what I haven't told anyone else. The whole fucking Greek tragedy from Alpha to Omega. A deal? Word of honor. Shake on it. Homer held out his hand, slowly and doubtfully, as if he thought Artyom might spit into it, but shook Artyom's hand firmly. While the old man was packing his bedding into his traveling bag, Artyom worked on his self-charging torch, squeezing and releasing the handle and listening to the buzzing of the mechanism as he filled up the battery. That was all he was interested in. Then he broke off. "Explain this to me. That book of yours, what's it for?"
"The book? Well, the way things are, we're living here and time has stopped, you understand? There aren't any historians. There's no one to record that we also lived, and how. So it's as if our lives are pointless. But that's not true, is it?"
Homer froze, holding a gray, crumpled pillowcase.
"They'll dig us up in 10,000 years, and we didn't write a single line. They'll try to read our bones and our soup bowls to tell who we believed in and what we dreamed about. And they'll get everything wrong."
"Who'll dig us up, Granddad?"
"Archaeologists. Our descendants."
Artyom shook his head hard. He licked his lips and tried to restrain the fury seething up in him. But it seared him, as if he had puked up bile. "But maybe I don't want them to dig you and me up here. I don't want to be bones and balls in a common grave. I'd rather do the digging myself and not be dug up. There are enough people here who want to while away their lives in a burial mound as it is. I'd rather kick the bucket from an overdose up on the surface than be stuck here in the metro until I'm old and gray. That's no human destiny, Granddad. That's not for human beings. The metro. Descendants, fuck it. Descendants? I don't want my descendants to be stuck underground all their lives. I don't want my descendants to be food for tuberculosis microbes. I don't want that. Or to slit each other's throats over the last tin of food. I don't want that. Or grunt and sprawl around with the pigs. I don't want that. You're writing a book for them, Granddad, but they won't even be able to read. Their eyes will wither away because they're not needed. Do you understand? But their sense of smell will be as keen as a rat's. They won't be people. Should we breed creatures like that? If there's even just one chance in a million that somewhere out there, at least somewhere, it's possible to live on the surface, under a sky with stars, under the sun, if at least somewhere in this fucking world it's possible just to breathe through your mouth and not through a rubber trunk, then I'm going to find that place. Got that? If there is a place like that, then yes. That's where we'll be able to build a new life, and have children, so that they won't grow up to be rats or Morlocks, but human beings. For that we have to fight. But we mustn't bury ourselves alive in the ground in advance, curl up in a tight little ball, and meekly snuff it. We mustn't do that. Irradiated and stunned by Artyom's forcefulness, Homer didn't say anything. Artyom really wanted the old man to argue. He wanted to take at least one more hard swing. But instead of that, the old man just smiled, honestly and warmly, with half his teeth missing.
"It wasn't a waste of time coming here. I sensed that it wasn't."
Artyom just spat. But it was the poison he spat out, the bile. For some reason, the old man's gap-toothed smile made him feel better. It eased his tension. The old man was ludicrous and awkward, but Artyom suddenly had the feeling that they were on the same side. Homer felt something similar, and waved to Artyom like a boisterous youngster.
I'm ready.
They walked stealthily through the station. Hanging above the blank opening of the tunnel, the station clock, a local sacred relic, showed that it was night. So it was night for everyone. Artyom was the only one who could have disagreed with it, but Artyom was already leaving the station. The hall was almost deserted except for someone having a late cup of tea in the kitchen. The crimson public lighting was dimmed. People had packed themselves away in their tents, lit up the weak little light diodes inside, and transformed their tarpaulin into a theatre of shadows. Each stage offered its own performance. As they walked past Shukoi's tent, it was a figure leaning over a table. And then they walked past the one where Anya was sitting with her face buried in her hands. The old man asked cautiously,
"Don't you want to say goodbye?" "No one to say it to, Granddad."
Homer didn't argue.
"To Alexeyevskaya,"
Artyom announced to the sentries at the entrance to the southern tunnel.
"Sukhoi knows about it."
The sentries saluted. If he knew, then he knew. Thanks for not going up on the surface again. They climbed down the welded iron ladder onto the tracks.
"The pipe,"
Artyom said to himself as he stepped into the darkness, tenderly touching the rough, moldy cast iron of a tunnel liner, measuring with a glance the 5 meters high ceiling of the tunnel and its fathomless depth.
"The pipe is calling."
Chapter 4 Payment. Alexeyevskaya was like Exhibition, only a crummier version. They tried to cultivate mushrooms and made bungled efforts with pigs here too, but as luck would have it, the mushrooms and the pigs always turned out half dead. So there was hardly enough for the locals, and nothing was left for trading. But the locals were a good match for their own pigs, sickly and resigned to the fact that in their fairy tale, the beginning and the end were both boring, and everyone knew them in advance. The walls here used to be white and marble, but now it was impossible to say what they used to be like. Everything that could be pried off and sold had been. All that remained was a concrete shell and a few human lives. Scraping away concrete was difficult, and no one in the metro needed goods of that sort. So most of the trading that took place concerned who the Alexeyevans were going to die for in battle. If there was any choice, the price would have been higher. But apart from Exhibition, there were no buyers to be found. So now the main purpose of Alexeyevskaya Station's existence was to protect Exhibition Station. And therefore, at Exhibition, the tunnel leading to Alexeyevskaya was regarded as calm. It could take a week to make your way through some stretches of tunnel, but even with all the compulsory precautions, it took them perhaps 30 minutes to get through this one. Although the minutes were left behind on the clock at Exhibition. It was 10 years now since the clock at Alexeyevskaya had been stolen, and since then, everyone there lived according to his own intuition. If someone wanted night, then for him it was night. After all, in the metro, night never ended. It was the day that had to be imagined. The guard detail glanced listlessly at the walkers, their pupils as tiny as the eyes of needles. There was a somber little white cloud hanging over the sentry post, and the air smelled of foot wrappings. They had been smoking dope. The officer of the watch heaved a sigh and made an effort.
"Where to?"
"Bis Prospekt, to the market," said Artyom, without making any effort to slip in through the eye of that needle.
"They won't let you through. There."
Artyom gave him a warm smile.
"That's no concern of yours, uncle. The tangent times the tangent gives the cotangent,"
the old man replied, infected by Artyom's genial mood and wishing to something agreeable too. And with that they parted.
"Which way shall we go?"
Homer asked Artyom.
"From the Prospekt? If they let us into Hansa, round the circle. Anything's better than going straight down along our line. Unpleasant memories, you know. Hansa will be safer. I have a visa stamped in my passport. Miller fixed that up for me. Will they let you in?"
"There's a quarantine, isn't there?"
"They always have some kind of quarantine. We'll break through somehow. All the problems will start after that. Theatralnaya, no matter which side you come at it from. You chose a fine place for your radio operator to live, Granddad. In the middle of a minefield.
What do you...
I'm joking. The old man squinted in a special kind of way, looking in under his forehead, inside himself, where he evidently had a map of the metro laid out. Artyom always had his own map in front of his eyes. He'd learned to look straight through it. He'd learned that in a year of serving with Miller.
I'd say it's best to go to Pavlets. It's longer but quicker. And from there up along the Green Line. If we're lucky, we can get there in a day.
They moved on through the pipe. Swishing quietly, the torch worked as hard as it could, but its spot of light only reached 10 steps ahead, and after that it was eaten up by the darkness. Water dripped from the ceiling. The walls gleamed damply, something gurgled hollowly, and the drops falling on their heads irritated their skin, as if they weren't water, but stomach acid. Doors of some kind appeared in the walls and sometimes the black openings of side tunnels, mostly boarded over or covered with welded gratings of steel reinforcement bars. After all, everyone knew that the bright-colored passenger maps didn't show even a third of the whole metro, the real one. Why confuse people with all that? They just hurtled from one marble station to the next with their noses stuck in their mobile phones, leapt forward an hour and that was it. They had arrived. They had no time to go thinking about what depths of the earth they had plumbed, and why wonder about what lay there behind the walls of the stations and where the barred-off branches of the tunnels led to. It was just good that you got where you were going in good time. Gaze at your phone. Think about something important to you. Don't stick your nose in where it doesn't belong. They walked with the special tunnel stride, docked to 3/4 size to coincide neatly with the sleepers. It took a lot of walking to teach your legs to do that. Those who were stuck at the station all the time couldn't do it. They lost the rhythm and stepped into the gaps.
Well, what about you, Granddad? Are you alone?
Yes.
All the light went forward, and Artyom couldn't make out the expression on the old man's face. Probably there wasn't one. Just a beard and wrinkles. They walked on for about another 50 strides. The knapsack with the radio set started getting heavy, really making its presence felt. Artyom's temples were soaked, and sweat started running down his back.
I had a wife at Sebastopol.
Do you live way out at Sebastopol?
I used to, yes.
Did she leave you? Somehow that seemed the most likely thing to Artyom.
Your wife? I left to write the book. I thought the book was more important, and my wife wasn't going anywhere anyway. Do you understand?
You left your wife to write a book? Artyom asked. How's that possible? And she let you go?
I ran off. When I came back, she wasn't there.
She left?
She died.
Artyom shifted the bundle with the protective suit from his right hand to his left.
I don't know.
Huh?
I don't know if I understand or not.
You do. You understand.
The old man said wearily but confidently. Artyom suddenly felt afraid. Afraid of doing something irrevocable. After that they counted off the sleepers in silence. They listened to the rumbling echo and distant groaning. It was the metro, digesting someone.
They weren't expecting any danger from behind. They stared hard straight ahead, trying to spot that faint ripple on the surface of the tunnel, following which something appalling and nameless would emerge, splashing out of that well of black ink. But they didn't watch with the backs of their heads. They should have.
Squeak, 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 squeak.
The sound stole into their ears like that, gradually. And it only became noticeable when it was already too late to swing around and point their gun barrels.
Ahoy!
If whoever it was had wanted to nudge them in the back with lead and topple them over face down onto the rotten sleepers, they could easily have had time to do it. A lesson. You should never think your own thoughts in the tube. It might start getting jealous. You're forgetting things, Artyom.
Halt! Who are you?
The knapsack and the bundle pulled his arms down, preventing him from taking aim. A trolley trundled out of the darkness.
Ahoy! Ahoy, friends!
It was that sentry, the co-tangent, alone on the trolley, a fearless man. He had abandoned his post and set off into nowhere. The dope had urged him on. What the hell did he want?
Lads, I just thought maybe I could give you a lift to the next station.
And he smiled his very best smile at them, gap-toothed and craggy. Of course, Artyom's back was begging for a ride, instead of slogging on by foot. He studied their benefactor, padded jacket, receding hair, puffy under the eyes. But there was light coming out through the pinpricks of his pupils, as if it was shining through a keyhole.
How much?
Don't insult me. Your Sukhoi son, right, the station master? I'm doing it for free, for peace throughout the world.
Artyom shook himself. The knapsack skipped and sat on his shoulders more comfortably.
Thanks, he said, making up his mind.
All right, then,
the watchman said delightedly and waved his arms, as if he was dispersing all the fog he had smoked over the years.
You're a big boy. You've got to understand the subtle points. No way you can manage without a beam compass in these matters.
He didn't shut up all the way to Riga.
Have you brought us a bit of shit?
The first person to meet them, ahead of the sentries, was a young guy with short-cropped hair and folded-down ears. He had slightly slanting eyes, but they were concrete-coloured, like the sky. His leather coat didn't close over his chest, and gazing out calmly and confidently at Artyom from among the curls and blue drawings behind the open shirt was a rather hefty Jesus. The young guy had a tin bucket securely perched between his feet and a bag hanging over his shoulder, and he repeatedly slapped the bag to make it give out a tempting jingling sound.
I'll give top price.
And then a thin jingle. In the old times, the Riga market, famous throughout Moscow for its cheap roses, used to be above this station. When the siren started howling, people had only 7 minutes to grasp what was happening, believe it, fumble for their ID, and run to the nearest way down into the metro. And the shrewd flower traders, who only had to go a few steps, crowded inside first, elbowing aside the other people about to be killed. When the question arose of how to earn a living underground, they opened the hermetic doors, shoved aside the bodies heaped up outside, and went back to the market for the roses and tulips. They were withered already, but perfectly good for a herbarium. And for a long time, the inhabitants of Riga Station traded in dried flowers. The flowers were damaged by mold, and they were radioactive, but people took them anyway. There was nothing better to be found in the metro. They had to carry on loving and grieving, didn't they? And how could they do that without flowers? Those dried roses and the memory of a happiness that seemed to have been here only yesterday, but had now vanished forever, allowed Riga to spread its wings. But new flowers couldn't be grown underground. Flowers aren't mushrooms or people, they want sunlight. And although the market above the station had seemed inexhaustible, it dried up. There was a crisis. Everyone expected that the Regans, accustomed to the good life, would have to switch to short rations and basically eat rats, like the other poor devils at ordinary stations without any special blessings. But their business acumen saved them. They thought over the possibilities, took stock of the advantages of their location, and suggested a deal to their neighbours to the north, to buy the surplus pig dung and then sell it on as manure to all the stations who cultivated mushrooms. Exhibition accepted the offer. They had more than enough of that particular asset. And Riga, already on the wane, already grey with imminent poverty, acquired a new lease of life. Of course, the new commodity didn't smell the same, but it was more reliable. And in this difficult new age, they didn't really have much choice.
Lads, aren't you carrying anything then?
the young guy asked with a short, sharp sniff, disillusioned with his visitors. And at that moment, other men with buckets just like him came flying up just a little bit too late, a whole throng of them shouting across each other.
Shit! Got any shit? Good money! I'll give a bullet for a kilo!
Like everywhere else in the metro, they paid here in Kalashnikov cartridges, now the only hard currency. Rubles had become meaningless from the very beginning. What could they be backed with in a world where a word of honor was meaningless and there was no state? Cartridges were far better. The banknotes had been rolled into cigarettes and smoked long ago. Large denominations were more highly prized than low ones. They were cleaner, they burned better, and they produced less tar. The poorer children, who hadn't gotten any empty cartridge cases, played with coins. But the real price of everything now was in bullets, as cartridges were affectionately known. A cartridge for a kilogram at Riga, and somewhere on the Sebastopol line, a kilogram cost 3. Of course, not everyone would want to take up this business. That was fine. There was less competition.
"Hey, you, Leo, shove off. I'm first in line here,"
said a swarthy, fidgety man with a moustache, shoving the young tattooed guy on his Christ figure. The young guy snarled back, but retreated anyway.
"Where are you going? Fuck it! Do you think if you meet them in the tunnel, all the shit's yours?"
a grey-cheeked, bald man asked, darting up to the first two.
"Look what these pipsqueaks trying to pull. Skip it, fellas, there's no point. They're not carrying anyway. Let me check that."
The sharp sense of smell of short-cropped Liocha with the cross hadn't deceived him. Co-Tangent wasn't carrying any cargo. He spread his arms good-naturedly and let Artyom and Homer get down.
"This here is the boundary of my domain."
And he trundled off back into the darkness, whistling something excruciating. The watch perfunctorily familiarized themselves with the new arrivals and let them through. The traders who had descended on them dispersed. Only the very first one, Liocha, was left. He was clearly the hungriest.
"How about the guided tour, Letts? We have plenty of stuff here for tourists to look at. When was the last time you saw a train? Our hotel's in one. The rooms are real swanky with electricity. In the corridor, I'll get you a discount."
"I know everything here inside out," Artyom explained amicably, and strode on. Homer shuffled after him.
Riga consisted of two happy colors, red and yellow, but to discover that, you had to scrape the layer of grease off the tiles that covered the walls of the station. One of the tunnels was plugged with a dead metro train, adapted as hotel accommodation, and all the life of this place was conducted via the other tunnel.
"Do you know our bar? It's only just opened. The local brews first class. And they distill stuff too, of course, from..."
"No, thanks."
"But you'll have to amuse yourselves here somehow, guys. The Prospect is closed. Quarantine. There's a barrier right across the tracks, and machine gunners with dogs. Didn't you know about that, then?"
Artyom twitched his shoulder.
"So what? Is there no way at all? It must be possible to arrange things somehow."
Liocha snickered.
"You go and try to arrange things. They've got a campaign on in Hansa right now. They're fighting corruption. You'll get there at just the wrong moment. Those on the take will get let off the hook later. Their own kind, aren't they? But they have to put someone away."
"But why did they close the border?"
"Some kind of mushroom disease, like rot. It's either carried on the air or people spread it, so they've put everything on pause for the time being."
"They're persecuting me," Artyom muttered to himself. "They won't let me go."
"Eh?"
asked Liocha, wrinkling up his forehead. "I loathe those damned mushrooms," Artyom said clearly and distinctly.
"I understand," Liocha agreed. "A miserable kind of business."
Several men rushed by with their tin buckets rattling. Liocha twitched and almost set off after them, but stopped himself. He probably calculated it would be more interesting to stay with the stubborn tourists.
"Your business is more cheerful,"
Homer remarked.
"Don't be like that, Granddad,"
Liocha said with a frown.
"Not everyone can be a broker. It takes talent."
"A broker?"
"Well, yeah. Like me. Like the lads over there, a broker. Why, what do you reckon it's called?"
Homer couldn't even make a guess. He was too busy trying not to smile.
but the corners of his lips stretched upwards anyway, no matter how hard he tried to coerce them. And then Artyom spotted a sudden change in his expression. His face turned cold and frightened, like a dead man's. He was looking past the broker, off to one side.
"Don't be like that," Lyoka told the old man, who had suddenly turned deaf. "As it happens, shit is the lifeblood of the economy. What do mushrooms grow on? What do they fertilize the tomatoes with at Sebastopol? So don't talk like that."
But Homer nodded to Lyoka at some random word in the middle of a phrase and started sidling away from him and Artyom. Artyom traced out the line of his trajectory with a glance. He saw, but he didn't understand. A slim girl with white hair was standing several steps away from them, kissing a very substantial, beefy broker. As he kissed her, the broker inconspicuously pushed his bucket away with his foot so that it wouldn't take the edge off the enchantment. This girl was the target of Homer's uncertain advance.
"And how much do you reckon we pull in on this lark?"
Lyoka asked, switching to Artyom now that he'd lost the old man. Homer stole up to the snogging couple and started tortuously trying to find an angle from which he could glance at their faces. Maybe he had recognized someone. But he didn't dare to interfere and drag them out of their kiss.
"What are you up to?"
the beefy guy asked, sensing Homer with the folds on the nape of his neck.
"What do you want, old man?"
The face of the girl, torn away from her kiss, was steamy and shriveled, like the sucker of a leech that has just been pulled off an arm. It was the wrong face, not the one Homer was seeking, Artyom realized.
"I'm sorry."
"Push off,"
said the leech. And Homer, sullen now but still agitated, rejoined Artyom and Lyoka.
"I made a mistake," he explained.
Artyom decided not to ask any questions, though. Open the tap of the old man's revelations and they could strip the thread.
"Of course, she couldn't have... No way, not with someone like that. Old fool,"
Homer said to himself.
"What?
You mean you work at a loss?"
"You could call it a loss. Hansa takes half of every delivery and customs duty. And now, anyway, with this quarantine..."
Hansa was what the Commonwealth of Circle Line stations called itself. All kinds of goods from every end of the metro had to pass through Hansa's markets and its custom posts. Many shuttle traders, rather than risk their necks traveling right across the metro, preferred to take their goods as far as the nearest market at an intersection between the Circle Line and a radial line and pass them on to local merchants. And it was less bother to leave the profit here, in one of Hansa's banks, in order to avoid having your head chopped off in the dark tunnels by evil characters who had spotted a successful deal. The stubborn individuals who insisted on lugging their goods further themselves had to pay customs duty in any case. And no matter how well the other stations lived, Hansa grew richer. No one anywhere in the metro could lay down the law to Hansa. That made its citizens proud and happy, and everyone else dreamed of obtaining Hansa's citizenship. From the center of the platform, Artyom could see a line of goods trolleys that hadn't been allowed into Riga running into the tunnel. That was what the brokers did, raced each other to buy their commodity in the northern tunnel and sell it in the southern one. After that, other people made a living from it.
"Trading's come to a complete standstill,"
Lyoka complained.
"They're strangling the entrepreneur, the fuckers. Fucking lousy monopolists. A man goes about his own honest business, but oh no, who gave them the right to get rich off our backs? I have to slave away, and their bellies will just keep getting fatter. That's oppression. Bugger it. If they let us trade freely, the entire metro would thrive."
Artyom felt a sudden liking for Lyoka, despite the smell. He wanted to continue this ludicrous conversation.
"There's no shortage of the stuff in Hansa," he said, remembering. "One time I had to work at Pavlitz, on the Circle Line, raking out the crap house. They sentenced me to work for a year. I escaped after a week."
"Consider that your baptism,"
Lyoka said with a nod.
"They dumped all that stuff into cesspits and shafts. They didn't stoop to trading in it."
Leocha chuckled darkly.
They live in grand style.
He took out a cigarette case with ready-cut papers and a tobacco pouch and offered some to them. Homer declined, but Artyom took some. He positioned himself under a light bulb dangling from the ceiling and glued his eyes to the words on the paper before rolling the homemade tobacco in them. A yellow page from a book, with painstakingly printed letters, ripped out by hand and torn along just the right line for making a roll-up, but not so that he could make sense of the words. God only knew what they meant. And the newly born propensity of gravity, such were the origins of the rule of the few. And so prepare yourself to live in time's hegemony. Here neither tapir nor wolf exist, and the sky is pregnant with the future. That satiating grain of the well-fed source. For just today those that were victorious managed to avoid flight's burial ground by tearing the wings off the dragonfly. And the wings had been torn off precisely. Artyom stuffed these useless letters with homemade baccy, rolled them up neatly, slavered them so that one edge stuck to the other and asked for a light. Leocha clicked his alcohol-filled cigarette lighter made from a machine gun cartridge case. The paper burned with delicious sweetness. The baccy was lousy.
So, you need to get into Prospect really badly, do you?
Leocha whispered, squinting through the smoke.
Into Hansa. Yes, we do. Got visas already?
Yes. They both took another drag. Homer started coughing. Artyom couldn't care less.
How much are you willing to pay?
Name the price.
It won't be me naming the price, brother. Other people decide that there. I can only introduce you.
Introduce us.
Leocha suggested they should take one for the road in the uproariously merry local bar with the sign that said, The Last Time, but Artyom remembered what they distilled the spirits from. They agreed Leocha would take them there and introduce them for 10 cartridges, a fair agreement made in a brotherly spirit. The sanitary cordon cut across the tracks right just before they entered Peace Prospect. Formally speaking, only the Circle Line station belonged to Hansa, and the Radial Line station supposedly existed on its own terms, but that was only formally and supposedly. If they needed to cut off the other lines, then they did it like a shot. The Hansa border guards in their grey camouflage gear stabbed the sharp beams of their torches into people's faces and barked demands at them to turn round and go back to where they had come from. A placard perched on a pole like a scarecrow with the word quarantine, and a picture of a mushroom pitted with ulcers. The sentries refused to talk to shuttle traders, and it was impossible even to make eye contact with them. They hid their eyes behind the forward-tilted visors of their camouflage-mottled caps. There was no way to take this bastion, except by storm. Leocha the broker lingered, looking for acquaintances of his behind the visors. Eventually he dived down and whispered something under one of them, winked at Artyom with his face half turned towards him, and twitched his chin to beckon him over.
"They're under arrest,"
the snout under the cap explained to the smoldering crowd about why these three were suddenly being let through.
"Come on, get back now. You'll carry the plague in."
They were led under armed guard through an oddly quiet Peace Prospect. Trading stalls closed off with screens, buyers besieging the cordon, disheveled saleswomen chilling their asses on the granite, chattering about life, death, and destiny. And it was almost dark. The market wasn't working. Light had to be saved. At any other time, this place would have been seething with life. Peace Prospect was a sort of center point where people brought all sorts of stuff from all over the place. Clothes to suit any taste, stalls of books which Artyom used to be unable to walk past, burnt-out smartphones in a heap. And what if you suddenly come across one that works, and it has photographs in it, in full color, jerked straight out of someone's memory? Buy it? Only to remember someone else's children. But on a thing like that, the only call you could make was into nowhere.
And guns, of course, all kinds, everything priced in cartridges. Sell what you don't need, buy what you do, and clear off out of it. The armed escort was strict. They watched carefully to make sure that Artyom and Homer didn't run off, prodding them in the back all the way from the radial line station to the circle line. Then they had them stand and wait by a little metal door in a white stone wall. After about 10 minutes, they were called. They had to duck down, then again and again. The service premises seemed to have been made for Morlocks. But then the entire generation that had been born already underground was stunted, and it would have fitted in here perfectly. Two men were ensconced in the little room. The first one had an impressive round face and glasses, but not enough hair. The rest of his body was hidden away somewhere in the depths of a massive polished desk. It looked as if there was nothing there but the entirely autonomous head. The second little man had nothing interesting about him at all.
Deputy Station Master of Peace Prospect Circle Line, Sergei Sergeyevich Rozhin,
said the inconspicuous man, respectfully indicating the fat-faced one.
I'm listening,
the fat face said in a staid, deep voice.
It's like this, Sergei Sergeyevich. These guys need to get into Hansa. They've got visas,
Lyocha told him. The head in glasses strained rustily to aim its puffy nose at him and sucked in air noisily. Catching a sniff, it contorted in a sudden spasm. Apparently brokers weren't often admitted to this office.
Until further instructions, entry to the territory of Hansa is, whatchamacallit, to be denied full stop,
Rozhin proclaimed. This was awkward.
So are there no options?
Artyom asked morosely, but Lyocha hissed at him.
What options? Bribing an official is the most immediately right now. That's it, and don't you ever dare again. Is that clear or not?
Rozhin's head declared menacingly.
At the time when people throw out the entire metro, you simply have no right. That's what we have quarantine for. Otherwise, the situation could get out of hand. Do you understand that or not? And if we've been put here to keep order, then we're going to keep order and keep order right to the bitter end, because you know what's at stake. Phytosanitary control measures. Dry rot, incidentally. This conversation is over.
He stopped talking, and silence established itself in the room as if the refusal had been recorded in advance on a cassette. It had played right to the end, and clicked, and no music followed. Rozhin seared Artyom and Lyocha with his gaze through the thick lenses of his glasses, and the silence carried on accumulating, as if something was expected of them. A dung fly buzzed past, as heavy as a bomber plane. Had Lyocha brought that in his pocket, then?
Then I'll go over the surface, Artyom said with a shrug. You're a bungler, Lyocha. I'm still due my 10 anyway.
Why go over the surface?
The inconspicuous man finally spoke up.
That's not safe.
Unlike Rozhin, he hadn't wrinkled up his face or snorted even once during the entire meeting. And in general, it was clear that he didn't wrinkle up his face very often. His face was smooth, his features were serene, his voice was lulling.
Sergei Sergeyevich has expressed the official position. He is on duty, after all. We can understand his position, and Sergei Sergeyevich has correctly identified the problem. Our task is to prevent the spread of dry rot, a dangerous fungoidal infection that affects mushrooms. If some compromise has matured in your mind, discuss it with me. The situation is serious. 100 cartridges for 3.
I'm not with them,
said Lyocha.
100 cartridges for 2.
Artyom glanced to see how Rozhin was doing. Such perfidy ought to have set him squirming. But no, the deputy station master hadn't suffered at all, as if the inconspicuous man was producing ultrasound that was simply inaudible to his ears. 100 cartridges. 3 and a bit clips of the 6 that Artyom had brought with him, just for the opportunity to get into Hansa. and this was only the start of the journey, after all. But even so, all the other routes, including the one across the surface, could cost him more. His head, for instance. The map was there in front of his eyes, down through Hansa, ride on its comfortable, rapid passenger trolleys all the way to Pavelets, and from there a quick leap, no difficulties or obstacles, straight to Teatralnaya. And no need to set foot across the border of the Red Line, and the Reich could be bypassed. "A deal," said Artyom. "Should I get them out right here?"
"Well, naturally,"
the inconspicuous man replied benignly. Artyom took off his backpack, unfastened the bundle, felt to find the clips hidden in among the junk, and started clicking out the dull, sharp-nosed cartridges onto the desk.
"10,
he said, pushing the first batch towards Sergei Sergeyevich.
"How very tactless."
The inconspicuous man was aggrieved. He got up off his seat and raked the cartridges towards himself.
"The man is on duty, and what do you go and do? What do you think I'm here for?"
Fortunately, Sergei Sergeyevich hadn't seen the cartridges. Frowning formidably, he cleared his throat and started sorting out the documents dumped on the desk, shifting them from one heap to another. Now he seemed to have been left in the office alone. He was quite incapable of registering the presence of all the others with his sense organs.
8, 9, 10, 100.
"All correct," the inconspicuous man concluded. "Thank you. You will be escorted." Lyoka patted his Christ approvingly.
"And let there be no more, whatchamacallit,"
Rogin's head piped up.
"Because there have to be some kind of principles, and at a difficult moment like this, when solidarity is required, dry rot, urgent matter, best regards."
Homer, who had remained dumb in amazement throughout this meeting, bowed to the talking head with genuine reverence.
"Beautiful,"
he said.
"Best regards,"
the head repeated strictly. Artyom swung the satchel up onto his shoulders. He grabbed it too abruptly, and a green metal side projected from the upper corner. Sergei Sergeyevich came to life and started lifting up his short, plump trunk, which he did, after all, possess from behind the desk.
"Isn't that the whatchamacallit radio set you've got there? It looks very much in a certain sense like an army radio in terms of carrying it into Hansa territory."
Artyom squinted at the inconspicuous man, but now that Rogin had woken up, the inconspicuous man, having barely managed to scrape his 100 cartridges away somewhere under the desk, had lost all interest in reality, and was absent-mindedly cleaning the dirt out from under his fingers.